Every year towards the end of January, there are at least two super events to note. One is the Super Bowl of football, and the often more interesting one is the Super Bowl of organic farming. The football event is the 54th year, and the organic farming event is celebrating its 40th year. For 40 years, EcoFarm has convened leaders, researchers, farmers, and fans of organic food and farming to the Asilomar Conference Center in Pacific Grove, California. For the aptly named 2020 Vision event, once again over 1,000 attendees made their way to discuss the opportunities and the challenges for the future of organic farming. Of all the events I attend, there are none that surpass the energy and optimism and enthusiasm you sense in the workshops, around the dinner tables, or along the beach at EcoFarm. Recent Farm-to-Table Talk guest Bob Quinn was one of the keynote speakers. Meeting with Bob face-to-face, you find him to be friendly, convincing, and totally committed to our becoming chemical-free in 43. However, he does admit that he picked the year 2043 just because it rhymed with free. He does have suggestions for big solutions. Number one, tie the high value of good organic food to fair farm gate prices and fair wages. Number two, reconnect the link between food and health. Number three, pay more money for good food with money saved by decreasing poor health. Number four, tax the polluters and producers of disease-promoting food. And number five, build communities and forget commodities. Two other keynote presentations also earned standing ovations. They were by Dr. Jonathan Lundgren on transforming science for a regenerative agricultural revolution, and Leah Penniman, the author of Farming While Black. Both have agreed to be guests on Farm to Table Talk. For more information on these and other speakers at the 2020 EcoFarm, go to eco-farm.org. In an EcoFarm workshop about mending broken parts of the organic program, Ann Ross addressed dishonesty in global sourcing when organic grain isn't really organic grain. Ann is a director of international policy for the Cornucopia Institute. Ann Ross is my guest for this episode of Farm to Table Talk.
Thank you. Nice to be with you.
And first, why don't you just explain cornucopia and what cornucopia stands for and what it does?
Sure. The Cornucopia Institute is a research and education nonprofit that advocates for family-scale family farmers, and we also serve as a government watchdog, which essentially means we make sure that the USDA organic regulations are enforced.
Now, the subject that you've been sharing has to do with issues that are going on trade, on product that's coming into the country largely that is identified as certified organic, but there's sometimes fraud involved. Explain that.
Yes. Well, several years ago, U.S. organic grain farmers started to see cheaper imports coming in from high-risk regions. And not long after that, the Washington Post broke a story about three vessels loaded with organic grain and soybeans that actually were not organic that made their way into the supply chain. And that brought a lot of attention to the issue. So we know we have a problem with this, and it's ongoing.
I did an interview, actually, with the Washington Post writer when that came out, and I wondered what happened to it. So one thing that happened to it is your job was created. Is that right?
That's right. I was brought on board with Cornucopia to investigate this very issue.
What were you doing before you came to Cornucopia?
Well, I went back to school after practicing law for several years, and I got an advanced law degree in agricultural and food law at the University of Arkansas, and that degree is called an LLM, which is essentially a master's degree for practicing lawyers.
They recruited you, and maybe describe your job description a little bit then.
Yes. So my first task was to find out where the grain originated, how the supply chains worked, and ultimately if the grain is authentic. So that's how the investigation started, and I relied on informants on the ground and also research and databases and our farmers here.
Now, largely, is it just grain, or you look broader than grain at other food products as well?
We do look at other food products. There are issues of fumigation at the border with fruits and vegetables, but I have focused mostly on grain the past couple of years because that's been of a major concern.
Now, I think people listening to this are saying, okay, but I don't eat corn, I don't eat soybeans, I don't eat wheat. And these products, I guess, matter because if they're coming in, and it's hard for people that are trying to produce, say, organic livestock, organic meat, they're supposed to be fed organic feed. And I understand there's kind of a shortage of it here. So if they can go offshore and get what they need, is that the primary use for these grains coming in, is to satisfy that demand to be able to have it for livestock feed?
Yes, that's exactly it. Most of this grain is coming in, and it's being fed to livestock. And as you pointed out, if the cow or the chicken does not eat organic feed, neither is the milk or the eggs or the meat on the table. So it's a big concern. Right now, the U.S. imports about 30% of the organic corn supply and about 70% of the organic soybean supply. So there's quite a lot of feed coming in.
So we ought to explain how this happens then. So if you are raising, say, pork that you're going to be marketing, or beef, or any livestock at all, or chickens, then you have to be getting organically grown corn, soybeans, and so forth to be able to make up that feed. And in the United States, a huge percentage of corn and soybeans are GMO because they're Roundup ready and other things like that. So it's hard to find, and then going offshore, you would normally think it's expensive, but if they're mislabeling and bringing the product in, I suppose it should make people, you know, say something's fishy here, because we're able to import this organic product so much cheaper, or at least maybe at same rates of what regular corn and grains are coming in. That should raise some eyebrows.
Absolutely, it should. Generally, organic corn that's grown domestically is about a third less cheaper than corn grown overseas. So that's been the general trend. One of the problems with our regulations has been that entities in the supply chain have not been required to look back to the farm to see where the grain is actually grown or coming from.
So instead, they're just presented a document that certifies that it's organic. Well, who issues those? So if you're importing organic grain to feed to your livestock so that you can market the meat as organic, who issues the certification that's saying, yes, this is certified organic?
That would be the certifiers. So in the organic program, there are USDA certifiers that either have inspectors on hand or hire inspectors to go in and make sure that operations are complying with the organic regulations. And these certifiers are actually hired by the operations they certify. So one of the issues we've seen with some of these foreign certifiers that haven't been compliant with the law is that there seems to be a revolving door of certifier employees then going to work for the operations. So that's something else we have to look at.
Yeah, that sounds like a typical story. You hear that often, of the regulators that have that revolving door, and the agent and whoever they're regulating, they're offered a job there sooner or later. And so they So you've got that's built into the system. That's a really real challenge. Give us an example, if you would, of how this works in some cases. Say, where would the grain be grown, and then how might it move before it ends up, you know, coming into the United States and being fed to livestock and sold as organic meats?
Right. Well, say, for example, that you have a Turkish grain trader who is possibly sourcing grain from Russian farms. And for all intents and purposes, that Turkish grain trader controls most of those operations. That Turkish grain trader might have an affiliated corporation in North America, for example, or at least common directors there. Then, and it's going to sell that grain to this North American corporation. In order to do that, it might use a broker located in another country, perhaps a country where the laws there don't lend themselves well to tracing transactions or finances. That may or may not occur. The grain will be shipped out of a free trade zone, which in and of itself is not unusual, but we know that trade controls there often aren't as tight as other places. So if you're going to do something like mix conventional and organic grain, that might be a place to do it. Ultimately, the grain crosses oceans, makes its way to North America. Producers buy that, feed it to the livestock, and the rest is on the consumer's plate, literally.
You know, it must not be coincidental that you mentioned Turkey. There have been quite a few operations in Turkey that have been identified or suspected.
Yes, Turkey has been a country of interest. That's where we noticed several years ago that huge shipments of grain, allegedly organic, were originating. And the question was immediately raised whether Turkey has the organic acreage to actually support those yields. And a huge problem has been whether we have sufficient data collection to confirm that those numbers, those yields, the shipments could be supported by the acreage. And what we've determined is we don't have that information. So that raises additional questions.
So is somebody in Turkey claiming that they're getting wheat or corn or whatever it is delivered to Istanbul to be loaded on a ship and, you know, sent to the West Coast to the United States, that it's Turkish grown organic that they're shipping to the United States?
Yes, that seems to have been the case, or at least that's what the Animal Plant Health Inspection Service alleged in a federal court pleading, that there has been a Turkish company, in fact, that was representing the grain to be Turkish when it was grown in Moldova, Russia, or Kazakhstan.
No, it's not really Turkish. It's getting loaded on boats, can come to the United States, and I guess then, when they're loaded on the boats, is that when they have to present some sort of certification that somebody has checked this out and know for a fact that this, you know, these are organic and that the source of the farm was an organic farm?
Well, to my knowledge, and again, this is a problem, is that no one's really checking on the vessel. So the documents are passed between buyer and seller. So it's quite easy to just generate fake, if you will, certificates or other paperwork that says the product's organic. So there's really no inspection mechanism on the vessel when the product's loaded.
But who signs a paper? I mean, that says that, you know, that this is these are certified organic product. Is there an agency that is recognized that's supposed to legally be able to do that?
USDA accredited certifiers sign off on that based on the paperwork that the operations provide or based on an inspection that they've conducted. So that rests with the certifier.
So someone could be here in the United States and they have a livestock operation and it's an organic operation, and then they want to reach out. They got to get some more feed lined up to be able to feed organic, and they call a broker somewhere. That broker then goes online anymore and gets a hold of, say, somebody that has it for sale in, say, Istanbul, and then that person is sourcing from someplace, possibly in these cases, not what they're claiming, and they're bringing in, and then they're getting a false certificate that can sell it as organic and ship it back to the United States and feed it to animals perhaps unbeknownst to the farmer here in the States, let alone to a consumer.
Oh, that's correct. Yes, if the importer is not looking back in the supply chain, or there is a break in the supply chain, maybe you have a company or other corporation in there that actually wasn't required to be certified, you don't have a complete paperwork trail. So yes, that is definitely a problem.
You know, I think some people listening to this are saying, oh, well, what's the big deal? Because they may not think it's that important, but for some people, they do think it's very important. I mean, if they want to be assured that something's organic and the rules are that they have to be organic feed, you know, they expect that regulatory agencies and laws and so forth are being followed and that hopefully most people are honest. So what you're doing is identifying where that's not the case and trying to what, toughen it up and make sure that that honest processes happen.
Yes, we want to make sure that all the regulatory protocols are in place to make sure that these loopholes are closed. We also want the USDA's National Organic Program to enforce the law vigorously. Consumers are paying sometimes 30% more for organic. They ought to get what they pay for. And, of course, we believe that organic farming is a great way to promote environmental health and human health. So all of these things go into the decision making consumers make when they're in the grocery store.
You know, I think one of the other stories that the Washington Post did on this, they were talking about dairy farms that they were looking at, and they were using drones to be able to identify the fact that dairy cows weren't really going outside in the farms that they were looking at. I'm wondering the kind of investigation that takes place in the foreign countries. Are there people involved that are going out and looking at the farms that are suspect?
There is some of that, but it's a little more, I guess I would say, challenging than seeing if cows are out on pasture, because once the grain is harvested, oftentimes it will go into warehouses. That's more difficult to trace visually. So there are challenges there.
So, Anne, as you've tackled this, was this on your radar screen at all personally before you got this job?
No, it really wasn't on my radar, but as soon as it was there, it's a cause that I took on and really want to help make this right for U.S. organic grain farmers and for consumers. Food fraud is a huge issue, and I'm not just talking about organic food fraud. But I think I read a statistic somewhere that food fraud is worth about $50 billion a year. And you can compare that to trade in heroin, that's $30 billion. And illegal firearms, I read $8.5 billion. So, you know, for fraudsters, food might be attractive.
That's pretty incredible.
Yeah, it really is. And I want to stress that that's not limited to organic by any means, but there's a lot of adulteration in food products and labeling. We've seen things like this, olive oil out of Italy, wine in certain places. So it's something that definitely occurs quite frequently.
One controversy that exists in this country is whenever you start talking about country of origin labeling, many products are identifying the country of origin. But I think there are some mislabeling that there are some products that are blended in that are taken up from a country that they want you to believe it came just from the United States. In the case of the meat industry, they got excluded from country of origin labeling. And yet, I wonder if you see, when you look around the world, that there's reason to be curious about what country these are coming from. I'm just guessing that not every country has the same standards and are as tough in regulation and enforcement. They can't all be alike.
Well, that's exactly right. They aren't all alike, and some countries don't have regulations that are as stringent as the U.S. We have regulations that are designed to protect our agricultural systems by keeping out certain plant diseases, pathogens, things like that. And there are also human health concerns when it comes to food products from other countries. We want to make sure that those laws in those other countries will protect American consumers. So if you're mislabeling that, or if there's, you know, an entity out there mislabeling, it can put both environmental and human health at risk.
So given how difficult it is to be able to tell whether what you suspect is the case is the real deal or not, what do you tell consumers that say, oh my gosh, I can't believe this, you're telling me this, and can I trust anybody? What do you tell them?
I tell them, yes, there are great and lawful organic producers and brands in the marketplace. And one of the things we try to do at Cornucopia is give consumers the educational tools they need to make choices that are right for their family. So you can go to Cornucopia's website, cornucopia.org, and look at scorecards that we've compiled that rate different brands of, say, eggs, milk, dairy, yogurt, and see which brands rate higher and which ones might be the ones you want to pick up at the grocery store.
Well, let's talk about farmers for a second. So if you're a farmer and you need to get enough organic grain and you haven't convinced enough of your neighbors to grow organic for you and you have to, you're going to place an order, is it possible for farmer to instruct somebody to either look more carefully or check what country that they're coming from when they're sourcing the organic grain that they're importing?
Diligent producers will take a look at the entire supply chain and ask for the paperwork that goes back to the farm. So that is one way that they can look to verify where the grain is actually coming from.
Now, Anne, you're dealing with the international side of this. Are similar efforts underway with your organization in looking at the honesty of the system within the United States?
Yes, we do that as well. And not too long ago, there was a huge case that came to light in the U.S. of organic grain fraud, where some individuals were criminally prosecuted for a scheme that was conducted by an individual with some of his cohorts.
And again, you mentioned that they can go to Cornucopia Institute's website and find out more information. How do you hope this changes, and how do you see yourself being engaged in these kind of activities longer term?
Well, I think it's definitely important to seek the truth. And when I look back on this, what I hope is that it will have been of great benefit to U.S. organic grain farmers, and that because of that, we can encourage more to transition to organic. That's my hope, and also that consumers get everything that they expect from organic when they buy it.
So I suppose part of that then is that if that situation is changing, is the more organic grains that are grown in the United States, the less dependent they be on getting them in from somebody in Turkey that's getting them shipped in from Uzbekistan or wherever. So that would make much more secure. Well, I really appreciate what you're doing, and thank you for being on Farm to Table Talk.
Thanks so much for having me.
You've been listening to Farm to Table Talk with your host, Roger Wasson.